Hello and welcome to Paradox, Untold Stories from Athletic Directors with Dr. Danielle Lapointe and Dr. Dustin Smith. We have some crazy and unique stories for you, which are made possible by our sponsor, Wall of Fame. At the Wall of Fame, our mission is to bring your school's legacy to life. We transform school tributes to make it easier than ever to celebrate your whole community, showcasing your school's diverse history, proudest moments, and top role models. We understand that the true value of our Wall of Fame is in your content. Whether you are starting a new tribute or adding to an existing one, we give you all the resources you need to build an interactive experience and take your content to the next level. Speaking of next level, let's check in to see what Danielle and Dustin have for us today.
Hi, welcome everyone. Today we have Todd Olson with us. How are you doing today, Todd?
Doing great.
Good. We'll get to where he's located, but he is staying warm up in North Dakota. Really excited to have him on today. And Dustin, I know what you're doing over there. You're living the dream.
I'm living the dream in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Not quite as cold, but we did have some drastic temperature changes, and we'll talk about that in a little bit with Todd. But man, I've been looking forward to this episode for quite some time. We talked to Todd in Orlando. In the podcast suite when we were discussing all the podcasts and kind of got some precursors to some stories. And I said, hey, Todd, we need to get you on there. And he said, you just call me anytime. And so we called and Todd answered and said, hey, I'll jump on here. I don't really need to do an introduction for Todd. He's pretty much a legend in the NIAAA world, past president of our association. He spent time in the boardroom, which I'm fortunate to do right now. And understand that experience. But Todd's led at the highest level. And I'm excited just to have somebody of his caliber on here. It really is an upgrade from the two hosts. So we're excited to have Todd on here, and we're excited to discuss his stories. But Todd, what I want to do before we really get going is I like to ask the question, tell us what the resume doesn't tell us. I can tell about all your accolades in North Dakota. I can tell about being on the NIAAA board and being the past president and that leadership that you've exhibited there. But what does the resume not tell us about who Todd Olson is? What do you like to do when you're not doing this crazy world that we call athletic administration?
Well, I like to spend time at the lake. My wife and I now are empty nesters, so we get to travel some. Going to become a grandparent for the first time this summer, and our second child is getting married in October, so it's a big year in the Olson household. I started out as a high school mathematics teacher and a basketball coach who never even thought about being an athletic director. Craig Perry was my district AD when I was, growing up as a coach, and he was about my age, so I never even thought about his job. My trajectory was going to be, I was going to be a high school principal. And I had my basketball team at team camp down here in Fargo one day, and my cell phone rings and it's Craig. I thought, gee, it's the middle of June. I don't hear from him very often this time of the year. And he said, hey, I just wanted to tell you, I just took a job with the Minnesota State High School League and I'll be leaving town soon. And I went, wow. Maybe I want to be an athletic director. And got the job a couple months later, and now we're 20 years down the road.
And, I mean, the crazy way for you to make that path, I mean, you started in the classroom teaching math, and you were coaching basketball, and thought, okay, I'm going to be a principal. That's my goal. And now here we are 20 years later, and you're on the other side of this AD world. Can you imagine your life as a principal now, or are you just so jaded by the world of athletic administration you thought this is exactly what I was meant to do?
Yeah, very much so. When I, my first job was a district AD, so the hardest day was probably the first day of school, the first year, and the building I was working in still felt like I was working in a bank. There wasn't any of that excitement. There wasn't any of that, kids all over, but there also wasn't a bell. And I don't know that I could ever go back and live by the bell.
Right.
As I watch our building principals on all the buildings, the bell rings, they go outside and stand in the hall. Next bell rings, they go back to their office. And it's like that all day long. And I just don't think I'm cut out for that anymore.
You know, the funny thing about the bell, the kids would always tell me, hey, fourth period, I have this class, or I'm doing this third period. I'm like, what does that mean to me? I mean, tell me a time. Don't tell me the period, because I don't function off the period or the bell, as you say. So it's unique how programmed the kids are and our teachers are to the bell. And yet we still operate off time, which is crazy just to balance those two out.
I really like that you call it the bell. Like, I feel like you put quotation marks for like the bell. And I know as soon as you said it, I knew exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I remember sitting in my office and being like, oh, I got to go to the restroom. Oh, can't, because the bell's going to ring in 2 minutes. So I'll just do it after. And like, you planned your whole day around the bell. I need to make a phone call. Oh, can't do it right now, because the bell's going to ring and that phone call is going to take longer than that. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And like, I shook a little when you said the bell.
Yeah, a little PTSD. Now, my question to you now, Todd, is you mentioned kind of just quickly about you like to go to the lake. And we talk about geography here, and you're in Fargo, North Dakota. So I have to think the lake is a pre-described amount of time that you can go to the lake. I'm guessing a lot of during the winter, you're not getting to go to the lake very often. So I'm guessing the lake life is the summertime.
Ice fishing, right? No? I mean,
not for me.
Not for me.
I don't like to be cold, despite the fact that I live in North Dakota.
I was going to say, you live in North Dakota. I feel like that's like a prereq to living there.
I'm going to cure that during the winters here in about 3 years.
Yeah. Called retirement and headed south?
Yeah. No, lake season here is pretty much May till September-ish. Then it starts cooling down.
Full disclosure, we were talking before we got on here, and Todd was talking about he's in Fargo, North Dakota. And so if you haven't looked at a map, it's getting north in the continental 48. It's getting up there a ways. So, but Todd said it was 60 degrees on Monday, their first day of track, and their coaches were outside, maybe the first time they've ever been outside on the opening day. And then Tuesday hit. And it was snow and snowbanks, and he's blowing snow off his driveway. They don't have school on Tuesday because it's a blizzard. So just talk about being an athletic administrator in that type of environment when you're dealing with the elements like you do. It's not the same for everybody. Obviously, in Florida where Danielle is, they don't worry about snow. But snow is a very real, and cold temperatures are very real reality for you.
You, I was going to say, you missed over the important part of that story. He mentioned negative 21. I can't even understand.
And, you know, in a lot of ways, in a typical winter, when it gets real cold here, we don't have to deal with ice. We don't have to deal with a lot of things that, you know, people look at me a little funny when I tell them that when it's clear, cold, and 20 below zero, weather's not that big a concern. The highways are usually in great shape, so you don't worry as much about that. This winter, there's been a lot more rain type of things, probably like you deal with in Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, that, gee, when the roads all get icy, it gets a little scarier than it's colder than heck outside. But yeah, we spend a lot of time, way too much time, worrying about what weather are you looking at online, what's the highway report saying. You know, those are things every AD in North Dakota has on their desktop, so you can click and see what the forecast is. We have digital graphs we watch that, well, the wind's not going to pick up to 40 miles an hour until 9 o'clock tonight, so we can probably get home by then. And just a whole bunch of extra time that a lot of parts of the country probably don't spend on meteorology.
Well, and he said this is the furthest south he's ever lived. So
I don't want to, like,
75 miles from Norfolk, North Dakota. And he's 75 miles from there, but he says that's the furthest south he's lived. So he's conditioned to this weather.
Well, I also don't want to glaze over the fact that he's like, oh, when it's negative 20, we don't have to worry about ice. Like, I need more explanation, please. Like, when it's that cold, you don't have to worry about, like, 20. You don't have to worry about, like participation at that. Like, I don't understand.
We don't worry about the roads getting icy or raining, turning to snow and all those type things. It's just cold. Primarily is clear. Highways are usually in great driving shape. Yeah, it's just cold.
And they're used to it. I mean, you've got equipment prepared for that kind of weather, though. I mean, you guys are well versed for that and prepared for that stuff. But North Dakota is not a highly populated state. And so the road conditions obviously are important because you're traveling a distance to be able to go play your opponent. So you want to make sure that the roads are a safe condition for you to be able to transport kids.
Yeah, we have 300 to 450 mile trips that some of our teams take regularly. So the condition of our two interstate highways and Highway 2 across the top of our state is pretty important for our travel.
Well, it just blows my mind. You know, we talk to people like Darren Oshero, who's out in Hawaii, and Darren says they have to fly from island to island to be able to compete there. You're not doing any flying, but you've got to worry about different conditions for you to be able to make those 300-mile drives. You want to make sure the roads are safe to do so.
Well, yeah, and I definitely noticed like a whole theme with our podcast, right? Like this was like a really like cool part of it. When we started, we were, you know, talking about the stories and like what the ADs do when they're not necessarily working. But it's, the weather has become like a really cool feature, in my opinion, that we talk about with a lot of our guests. And I'm really fascinated because the whole country is dealing with things differently. You brought up Hawaii, you know, we're talking about different conditions across the whole, you know, we talked to Val in Florida, and we got like the long stretches where people don't even show up. Officials are, you know, like I take care of extra officials. Like we have so many different unique situations across the country. And I just find it really interesting how all of the different states handle it.
But you still have sports and you still have outdoor sports. And so what is too cold to go outside? Do you guys have a rule in North Dakota that you can't participate or practice outside if it's below a certain temperature?
We really don't. We, you know, it kind of varies by the conditions. If the tennis ball won't bounce in the spring, it's probably too cold to play tennis.
Right.
Now, is that 40 degrees? Is it 35 degrees? We have different coaching groups that want different standards, but how cold is it to hit a ball with an aluminum bat? Well, if the bat breaks, it's probably too cold.
We have it where it's too hot in Florida and you can't play sports outside. So you would think that you have it for too cold, but nope.
Well, we don't have a lot of outdoor sports when it gets really cold.
Right.
None. We don't have Nordic skiing. We don't have any of that. We're strictly inside from roughly November until April.
Like, so when does baseball start for you, Todd?
We'll start baseball here second week in April. Okay. And we might even get outside to play baseball instead of be in the gym the first month like we were last year.
We have a lot of year.
Our school year's late August start to late May to early June end.
Okay.
And will the baseball state tournament, will it be after school ends?
Yeah, just a week or so after we're done with school. Some of our smaller schools are done earlier.
So you're trying to cram it all in a short amount of time is what you're really trying to do.
Yeah, if we get a six-week baseball season, we're pretty fortunate.
Yeah, that's crazy.
A lot of winters where you play for 3 weeks straight, you pretty much play every day just trying to play everybody in a conference once so you can seed yourselves into the tournament. But
right.
This looks like a good spring.
So yeah, so far it's been good. Every other day at least.
Yep.
I feel like you can't predict this year. Don't jinx it. I feel like it's all over the place.
Yes, it is. One thing we dealt with this fall that I had never dealt with was smoke. from the Canadian wildfires.
Oh, you probably got that pretty bad, huh?
Yeah, there were days where we postponed games because of smoke in late August and early September that I'd never experienced that. But every AD in North Dakota now has the Air Now app on their desktop also because
of Canada.
Apparently the Canadians can't figure out how to put up fires. I don't know.
Or they're really good at starting them, whatever you want to look at it.
Yep.
Well, that, wow. I mean, it's just a different, I mean, it's still the same country, but just different things that you got to deal with there that maybe we don't. And in Oklahoma here, we're gearing up and people are starting to worry about thunderstorms and tornadoes and all that's going to happen in the spring. And you know what happens in spring sports. It's just crazy because you're outdoors and everything. And you got to make sure that our weather app is important to us, the alerts that we get to be able to say where lightning strikes are and if it's going to be tornado outbreaks or, you know, just a different part of the country, but still dealing with elements that may be different than Todd, but they're still elements. And Todd's got to deal with different elements than what I've got to deal with.
I just find it to be fascinating. I really do. So kudos to all you do for your kids to make sure that you guys can still play. And, you know, maybe your season is shorter, but at least you're squeezing it in there for them. So that's good.
Well, it's still for kids. I mean, what we do is for kids and trying to give kids opportunities. And they live in North Dakota and the elements may be different, but they're still getting the opportunities to compete. And that's no matter where you're at, whether that's in Florida or Washington or Maine or Hawaii, you're still given opportunities for kids. So, but we didn't bring you on here, Todd, to talk about weather and talk about the elements that you're dealing with. You're unique as a guest in that you provided a list and said, hey, pick, you vote on what you want. And full disclosure, you even talked to your wife last night and said, hey, do you remember some of these that may have impacted me a little differently than I do? And she produced a couple of those stories. So, the story time is what Danielle loves the most. Mm-hmm. And so we want to open up and say, I know in your 20 years of being an AD, you've dealt with some crazy stories. So we're going to open the floor and let you roll with it how you want to, Don.
All right. Danielle's first choice was the coach and the bus driver story. It was one of my very first years as an AD. Had a veteran football coach, 30-plus-year guy, who had a ongoing hate-hate relationship with our transportation company.
He said hate-hate. Hate-hate.
So they're hosting a football doubleheader at our community stadium, and coach's team gets beat in a hard-fought game by a late touchdown, and he's not real happy after the game. So he comes out of the arena, which is where our locker rooms are, looks to the gate where his bus should be, and it's not there. And he goes off the rails. Pretty soon he's running down the fence. He hurls himself over an 8-foot fence, starts running down the street towards the bus he sees parked about 3 blocks down. The bus is from a different town, but it's the same busing franchise as we have. So he pounds on the bus door. I'm watching this from the stadium gate. He's pounding on the bus door, gets the bus driver to open the door, goes in, and I can see him screaming at this bus driver, just going nuts. I'm worried that there's going to be blows thrown. So I start running down there to get him off the bus, and we realize that's not our bus. That's from the town. The bus driver's eyes are about as big around as you can get. We get him settled down. We get him a bus. The next day, the bus company from the other town is calling.
Gee, I wonder why.
Charges on my veteran coach. thought the guy just couldn't find the gate. And, you know, I saw part of yours was, what do you learn from that? And I'm still trying to figure that out. You know, coach calls the next morning and apologizes. And I say, well, we might have bigger problems than that because they want to file assault charges on you.
On you.
Yeah. So we talked the bus company down and got everything put back in its box. But it was just, as a new AD, that was one I just thought, what is going on here?
But you don't think that you would have to talk to a grown adult about how to treat other people and handle your emotions. And I mean, you think he would have blown enough steam by like sprinting down the gate, jumping the fence, sprinting some more. Like, I don't know. That's a lot.
It was an amazing 10 minutes in my career.
And the best part is you set it up by saying the hate-hate relationship. And I can see why it was probably reciprocated from the bus company to in that situation. But you said he marched down or sprinted down the fence. And the word you used was hurled himself over an 8-foot fence.
Yep. And this is a 50-some-year-old guy heading over an 8-foot fence. It was impressive. Until we got to the end.
Well, and then he ran all three blocks down to find the other bus and was banging on that door. I mean, was it like slow motion for you as you see this unfold? Was it like an out-of-body experience for you to say, wow, is this really happening?
Yeah, every part of it as it advanced, I thought, wow, what is going on? And I knew of this relationship with the bus company as a fellow coach in that building for more than a decade. And we all had that kind of relationship on some level with that particular company. But to see this was...
You saw it unfold. The hate was really unfolded there. Yeah.
And the kids saw it too.
No, the kids were in the locker room. I don't know that there were two other people in the world other than he and I who realized what was going on.
And the bus driver.
Okay, well, yeah, that's good at least.
The bus driver at the end of the whole thing. But
I don't think the bus driver knew what was going on either.
Well, no, and it was kind of the transition between two games and, you know, people were leaving the stadium. The next crowd hadn't really come in yet, and it was almost like I was there with a video camera watching this by myself, thinking, this is really going down.
So what was the bus driver's reaction? I mean, you said his eyes were big, but did he ever just kind of be like, I mean, I'm sure it was shock one, but two, did he get in a yelling match with him or did he just sit there and wear the yelling?
No, he was just wide-eyed wondering. See, he had already dropped his team off for the next game. He just went down there to park and maybe have a nap and a sandwich. I don't know. And somebody's banging on the door.
Oh, God.
And I'm amazed he opened the door.
Probably
you know,
doesn't
I may
anymore.
Have been tempted just to keep the door shut and say, hey, dude, you've lost your mind. You're not my coach and you're not the team I'm picking up.
Did his team have problems getting a bus after that?
No, eventually it showed up.
No, but I mean like for like next games and stuff. I feel like I would if I was a bus driver, I'd be like, I'm not taking that one. That's the team I wanted to
drive. This was a company that had franchises in multiple communities. So I don't know that anybody knew from the other community what had occurred. I don't know that our drivers that drove our kids knew what had occurred.
Oh, I see.
So you said the bus company, you talked them off the ledge, and then you told your coach, now there may be assault charges. Were there ever assault charges or anything pressed?
No, they didn't. That was part of talking them off the edge. They didn't go any further with it. I tried to explain that this was just mistaken identity sort of thing. And some of the other things that go into handling competitive stress.
Was there any discipline for the coach? I feel like I would have, like, very subtly like lit an anger management flyer class across my desk towards him.
We had a discussion and he was very apologetic and we said, this can't happen anymore.
Well, and it clearly didn't kick you out of the profession, but did you question being in the athletic administrator role when you're trying to fight for somebody who really had no defense? I mean, other than he was just trying to find a bus. I mean, I understand that, but it didn't get you out of the profession, but did it question, did you sit back that night and thought, man, why did I even do that? I could just coach basketball. I don't need to be dealing with this.
No, I didn't really. You know, my thought has always been, as a building AD and a district AD, I was there to protect and support my coaches. Now, that looks different sometimes.
That's the best way to say that. It looks different. I just still envision him hurling himself over the fence.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah. I don't know how he could have thought that this was going to have a good end result. Like, now I have to get on the bus with this person I just screamed at. Like, this was not a good idea from like the very beginning. This was,
well, he wasn't the driver for their team, right?
No, he was the driver for the other team.
Well, oh, I see. So it was, he was, oh, I see. All right. I didn't catch that. Bill,
yeah.
Why would you do that?
I mean, I just imagine that conversation with the coach when you said, all right, you apologize, that's well and good, but we may have bigger issues than your apology right now, because they're talking assault. And I can understand from that bus driver's perspective, yep. Like, wait a minute, I'm just doing my job. And here comes this lunatic out of nowhere.
Trying to eat a sandwich.
I'm just trying to enjoy a sandwich and a nap.
Man, that is definitely, those are the things that are really interesting to hear, because you know, you don't, that's part of the game management, but like, you don't think to deal with a situation like that. Like, what do you do when you see your 50-year-old coach hurl over a fence to get to a bus driver? Like,
Todd said he was sitting there in the stadium gate watching this all unfold, so he watched him run down the three blocks. Watched him start,
it's not the
up.
Things that you should have to worry about as an AD, but it is the things you have to worry about as an AD. It's just,
kid problems are easy. Adult problems are hard.
Yeah. Did you have to chase him down? Did you get on the bus with him and say, all right, coach, you got to get off here? Or did he get
I think he realized in midstream that, something's not right here.
Man.
I didn't hear the whole conversation, but.
Probably a good thing.
Off the bus by the time I got down there.
Man, that's unreal. That's a great story in the fact that, I mean, and you talk about it, you got to try to figure out what takeaways are. You still don't know what the takeaways are. Maybe identify your bus and make sure it's the right bus driver before you, because I'm assuming it's not the, you probably have the same bus drivers or some of the same bus drivers for most of your trips. So like, when he opened that door, did he think, this guy doesn't look familiar at all?
I don't know what his thoughts.
He just raised his hands. He said, I don't know.
And somebody bussed them to the stadium because they dressed off-site. And it's not always the same person, because it's probably a five-hour window from the time they were brought to the stadium till they were done with their game.
Right, and it was a competitive situation, as you mentioned. Yeah. The stress is involved with that, and sometimes you don't think. We had a basketball coach one time that we're in the national tournament. And he got mad, and he had a Diet Coke bottle, and it was halfway full, and he throws it up against the wall. Well, a girl was sitting right there at the wall, and it landed right, I mean, hit right above her head, and Diet Coke sprayed everywhere, and I just kind of witnessed this, and I went and grabbed him and said, Coach, we can't do that. I mean, you dang near hit that girl, and that's a whole nother conversation. I can't defend that. And just like, right, Todd, in this situation, you can't defend that behavior of a coach going in there and losing his absolute mind. And, you know, for really just because he was, as you said, a mistaken identity.
Well, coach, but even if it wasn't, the bus is in the wrong spot. Like, come on. You don't talk to somebody that way, even if it was the right bus in the wrong spot. Like, there's a lot.
The best summary, Todd said, kid problems are easy. Adult problems are hard, and that may be the quote of the year. We may have to have a whole new category for our award ceremony. The quote of the year, maybe that's in the front runner.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, I know, Todd, you had another story that Danielle voted for, so she picked two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you got another story that if it even rivals this, I'm going to be really impressed.
It does.
Okay.
I only know one sentence. I only know one sentence in both of these stories, but it's good enough.
This one was probably the most terrifying moment I've had as an athletic director. We are hosting the small school state basketball tournament in the Alaris Center in Grand Forks, which is a football stadium. So one end of the stadium moves in the length of the field to create a smaller space like a basketball arena. So we had 8 schools there playing in this state tournament. Probably most of the attendees had not been in that building ever, maybe. It was a fairly new building. And we're in the second half of a game, kind of mid-afternoon. And the National Guard, there's a timeout, and the National Guard comes out with their T-shirt cannons, and they're shooting T-shirts up into the stands. So on one sideline of the basketball court, there's stands that go up to a concourse where people enter and leave the building and everything. There's concessions up there and everything. The other sideline of the basketball court, running the length of the floor, are some stands that were the ones that were pushed across the football field to create a small little bit area for a basketball court. There is nothing behind those stands. It is 40 feet from the railing to the cement floor below.
Ooh.
So when the guard gets over to that side of the court, about the first T-shirt they shot goes up over the bleachers, hits the curtain that's on the back of it. We had a black curtain hanging behind there, and drops to the ground. Well, a young man sitting down about 5 rows from the top sees this shirt hit the curtain and fall down, not realizing there's nothing back there. He gets out of his chair, hurdles the 4 rows or 5 rows of seats behind him, grabs the railing at the top of the railing, and swings his legs over
like your coach, if you're running to a bus driver.
You can almost see as he gets up to the top, he has this realization that there's nothing that's going to catch me back here. So down he goes. 40 feet, lands on the cement. By the time I get over there, I can see he's got a couple forearms that aren't in very good shape. He's unconscious. I have never been so terrified in my life. The staff from the Alaris comes running. The paramedics come running. The ambulance is coming into the building. And you know, he's pretty messed up temporarily. He ends up being fine. He actually was from a small town where a second cousin of mine was the basketball coach. And not that winter, but the next winter, he played basketball for him. So he ended up all right. But the sheer panic of seeing that and then the emergency response, and it's behind the bleachers, which there's nothing for probably 70 yards behind that. So a lot of this goes on and nobody in the arena, for the most part, knows that there's anything going on. But I have never experienced anything like that, where by the time I got to him, I didn't know if he was alive or not.
Yeah.
Oh, and my. 40 foot, that's,
it was... I've had a lot of things happen at games. I've had heart attacks. I've had compound hip fractures. I've had a lot of stuff. Nothing compared to that. And just, I don't know that I recovered the rest of the tournament. And that was on day 1. just mentally, you're just so, wow, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, and you think about, I mean, there's an old saying, nothing but air and opportunity stands between us. And that kid had literally air and opportunity. And he found, I mean, man.
And he jumped, too. It wasn't like he fell or he made this conscious decision to jump. And I just,
how many times do you think things have been shot into the stands at a North Dakota High School Association event since that day?
Probably zero.
Zero.
I was going to say, we're not allowed to do that here in the district I was in. So, and fans hated it. Fans hated that you couldn't do that. And this is a really good example of why maybe it's not the best idea. Well, even falling down. I went to, people fall. I just went to a Savannah Banana baseball game and a foul ball was hit to us, right where my husband and my dad were sitting. They were not there. They were at the restroom. So it was just my mom, a 4-year-old, and myself sitting there. The dude 2 rows back jumped for the ball. There might have been beer involved. He jumped for the ball. And didn't have, because, you know, stadium seating is steep. He fell, his face fell on the back of my husband's seat and he just jacked up his whole face.
Yeah.
The dad bod cheerleading squad ran up to us to make sure we were okay. And like, it was a huge deal. But like, that's one of my fears of things being shown, like, you know, up into the stands is people fall forward while they're like, going for things, but your case was the opposite and worse, possibly.
Well, I mean, think about it. This was for a t-shirt that maybe is $10. I mean, it's not worth your life for sure. But just thinking about Todd responding and getting there, not knowing, I don't know if this kid's one alive, but two, I don't really know what I'm going to walk into. I mean, I can look up and see how far 40 feet is, and I can know that the concrete doesn't give. I mean, it's undefeated in this process, so I could be walking into something that is just not something I want to see. And you said his forearms were in bad shape, or not normal, or not in bad shape, or whatever. So maybe he tried to brace himself for the fall. I don't know. I'm just assuming.
Yeah.
What
about his legs? His legs okay?
From what I could see, they were. I don't know
exactly. Because he wasn't your kid either, right? So you're not,
No, no. He was from a small town in the middle of our state. But it was just a terrifying moment that if I ever write a book on all the stuff.
That's a nightmare situation.
Did they have something moving forward if they went back to that venue? Do they have something blocking that railing now so that they can't go backwards off
sign
of
sign that says don't jump?
I think they had some signage, if I remember right, that said something about there is not a walkway behind this, or and they had some caution tape and stuff put up, but it was a scary deal. I watched the video of it with the security team for later that day and thought, wow. And he went out of here with his eyes open, so we were pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, that could have turned out way worse. Not that it wasn't bad, but it could have been way worse. And just the amount of, this wasn't your kids. This was, I mean, but our job as athletic administrators is we're there for the spectators and make sure it's a safe environment and make sure that they have an enjoyable experience while there. You can't really control a kid making that decision. But then again, you think about it. It was for a t-shirt.
Well, right. And what could we have done so that he would have known there's nothing back there?
Right.
It stuck with me the rest of the weekend.
I don't know how much you could have done to make sure there was, I mean, for the most part, I don't assume there's things behind bleachers in general. That's not an assumption I make. So I don't know. I mean, when you're talking about like, we have to be prepared for things. That's something that I don't know if I would have been like, Oh, we got to tell somebody there's nothing behind the bleachers. Like, I don't feel like that would have crossed my mind. It will now.
But I promise you, North Dakota, it is. I mean, it's something that they're cognizant of because of that situation.
Yeah.
Well, and you hang curtains when you go into big arenas to try and create a smaller environment. By doing that, do we create an illusion that there's something there instead of showing the 70 yards behind the bleachers to the wall of the stadium? To this day, probably have the answer.
Right. I mean, you've said that on a couple of occasions. Yeah. I'm trying to find takeaways and I don't know what they are.
Truth of it is, I don't have many answers, period.
Go t-shirt cannon. That's the takeaway.
Great stories, not many answers.
So.
I mean, man. I just think about, I mean, you said that not very many people knew that there was this incident. I mean, they were just continuing to play basketball, and even with the ambulance coming in, the paramedics showing up, and, you know, people rushing from the building itself to try to make sure that everything's okay. To be able to, I don't want to say compartmentalize that, but to keep it to where it's not a huge distraction and you're able to continue playing. I mean, I'm guessing the kids on the court didn't even know something was going on.
No, I don't think so at all. I think, you know, a select few people who happened to be looking in that direction at that instant might have known something was going on, but most of the people in the arena didn't. There are other places to bring the ambulance in, you know. So it's...
You're lucky that you actually saw him. Yeah, you're almost lucky. He's almost lucky that you guys at least saw him, right? Because it's possible that he's jumps in behind the bleachers and you didn't see him do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been even a worse situation.
Or what if you're the National Guard and you're the one who shot that dang t-shirt and you're thinking, oh boy, I mean, I got to get my aim better, or you just realize that we're not going to have them shooting the t-shirt cannons anymore. But it's amazing to me how people lose their minds for a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And chances are the t-shirt's not going to fit you. But you lose your mind because it's free. And I can appreciate free. But I don't, it's not worth my life, and it's not worth jumping 40 feet to see if I can go visit the doctor to fix my arms.
That's a lot coming from you.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you try to deny that?
You contrast that with things that happen out in front of everyone. You know, we've had heart attack courtside at a region basketball tournament, to where we form the human shield around the paramedics doing the CPR, and I'm over telling the coaches, hey, we're playing, let's go. Well, isn't that disrespectful that you start playing while this guy's having a medical emergency?
Right.
Or is it less respectful that 4,000 people are watching CPR being done on an individual?
Yeah, we were in a national championship football game, and we were celebrating. We'd won the national championship, and afterwards we're celebrating on the field, and one of our players' dads had the heart attack right there in the middle of the field. And it's that question. You're worried about that guy, and they ripped the shirt off, and then they're putting the AED on him, and they're trying to bring him back. Thankfully, he survived. But it's still that moment of, how do I handle this? And it was brought to light last year with DeMar Hamlin. I mean, they just tried to form that human shield, as you talked about. And then you weigh, do we continue? Do we continue playing? Do we end the game here? And fortunately for you guys, it wasn't even noticed by anybody else. So that wasn't even a determination you had to make. Kids were still playing. You were just trying to take care of a kid.
Well, and I think, too, one of the takeaways from this story can be, like, your emergency action plans and how important they are. Like, you knew exactly where the ambulance could come, where they needed to come, where that door. So your emergency action plan is important. And we think about things that can happen, you know, to the athletes, or, you know, maybe to the dad if he had a heart attack. But this is a thing that you don't necessarily think will happen. But your emergency action plan is still valid here. And if you have a solid one in place and everybody who's working the event knows that and the facilities knows that, then I think that helps a lot. The second thing is t-shirt cannons aren't athletic directors' friends. My second take.
There's a hate relationship there. We'll just go back to the bus company. But I think for Todd, is that place wasn't even his home arena. I mean, he's there hosting a state tournament, or they're working the state tournament.
Yep.
And it's not their home arena, so he's got to be familiar with the EAP there, or what that procedure is there. And maybe had some familiarity with it and could make that happen. But there's sometimes when it's not even a home event for you, but you still need to be aware of those situations.
Well, and that was one of the advantages in that situation, is their building staff had their emergency action plan and they enacted it instantly. And I didn't really have a lot to do with it in that situation. Once they became aware of it, then it's their show. They have the relationship with the police department, the fire department. So that, you know, that was one of the good sides of it being in that, a large venue. But one takeaway for people that run events in strange venues, know where the AED is.
Yeah.
I mean, I, to this day, from the first heart attack incident I had, that's my first thing I look for around the arena floor is, okay, where is the AED? In case the athletic trainer isn't right there, doesn't have one in their bag, whatever it might be, is where is it? How can you get to it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you hope you never have to deal with that, but chances are you're going to have to. With our society now, and especially the heart disease that happens and attacks people, and I mean, there's some signs you don't ever know, and you'll just see them fall. And knowing that procedure, basically where the location of that AED is vital. And so that's great. That's great advice for whenever you go to an event that's not yours,
mm-hmm.
or even your events. Know exactly where your AEDs are in case of an emergency. I mean, obviously that's what they're there for, but be cognizant, because 30 seconds could be the difference in life or death for somebody.
Yep. That's great advice. For sure. I picked good ones, right?
Yeah, I don't know that Todd will say they're good, but yeah. I mean,
I picked entertaining ones for us, I guess.
He may have some flashbacks to that situation that may not be great, but I still think they're powerful stories that can really get points across. Hopefully people don't have to deal with the AED ever. Hopefully you go through your tenure as an AED and you don't have to worry about that. I'm just going to tell you, probably you're going to have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of running from it, figure out, okay, where is the location of the AED, and how do I deal with it? How do I keep the calm,
mm-hmm.
keep from getting chaotic? And just think of the two contrasts in the story. I mean, Todd watched his coach lose his mind and run down the deal. And then the second story, he had to go and make sure that chaos didn't happen.
Lost a kid lose his mind and jump over a fence.
Yeah, I mean,
jumping in North Dakota.
And he was unconscious when he got to
for a reason, guys. All North Dakota, there's a fence there. Don't jump over it. That's the moral of this story.
I just think from going, I mean, I just clearly the kid wasn't thinking. He was just trying to get a shirt, and that was the quickest route to get to the shirt. He thought that maybe there was a landing back there or some kind of walkway or concourse, because on the other side, that's where it was.
Yeah.
But it just didn't register with him that there were 70 yards until you got to any part of the concourse.
I can't even imagine why.
I mean, just,
I know. I'm a little stressed out about it now. The kid's okay.
Yeah, he's probably not a kid anymore. That was quite a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, Todd, I knew that you'd have stories. You told us even the stories when we were sitting in the suite, mm-hmm. that you had some stories over the 20 years. And maybe one day I'm going to get you back on here, because I want to talk the cattle trailer story. Mm-hmm. I won't tease it. I'll just tease it now. But we need to get you back on here. And I want to do a joint deal. I want to have you and Mark Rarick get on, and we can talk weather conditions and the issues that you've had to deal with from a Mother Nature standpoint that maybe the rest of the country doesn't. But I think they're vital. They're important, the stuff that you're going to have to deal with. So I want to invite you to come back again. I'm going to get you on here with Mark Rarick the two things I want to talk about, one, the weather with Mark, but number two, I want to talk about that cattle trailer story, because that was hilarious that you told us in Orlando. And I'll just tease the audience with that. We won't get into it until you come back. You're just going to have to tune in again when we get Todd back on here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Todd. Mm-hmm. This has been awesome. And I really enjoyed the fact that you let us vote.
Not us. He let you vote.
That's true. He let us vote on what stories we were interested in, and they were, and he titled them beautifully, right? This is all I knew was like a sentence of each of the stories, but it was Coach Meltdown and Bleacher Incident. That's what I knew. Thank you. I do think that there's some value in these, even though the takeaways might not be as clear sometimes, but thank you very much for taking time out of your busy day to be with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That wraps up this episode. Thank you for listening, and thank you to our sponsor, Wall of Fame, who excels at telling your school's stories and supports us in telling ours. Check out the description of this episode for a link to receive a discount on all Wall of Fame products. We are looking forward to the next story and hope you are too.